Back, everybody, to the Be Better podcast. We are once again doing our new format where we're calling people on the phone, not randomly, obviously, but we're connecting with people that are not in the world headquarters here. So today, live via the wonders of cellular technology, we have Paratriathlon Program Senior Manager from USA Triathlon, Amanda Duke. Amanda, welcome.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Hey, it's been a long time coming for this one, hasn't it been?
Yeah, we've been trying to set this up for quite a while, even in person when you were here in Colorado Springs a couple months ago.
I know. I lugged all that gear out to the OTC, and it's like, nope, not going to come. And it was like just for a little bit of snow, too. I felt like you totally flaked out on that.
It was a little bit of snow, but I live out in the plains. So, you know, while there may be no snow at the Olympic Training Center, we could have a foot of snow out where I live.
Yeah. So, I mean, in your defense, it did get quite blustery. And I almost was worried about my flight not being able to get out on time at that point too. But we all have our battles to fight, and I thought you did well, and good for you for making the correct choice not to risk life and limb just to record a 30-minute podcast with me.
We have this amazing technology to do it over the phone, so this could arguably be just as good.
It could, well, arguably. I mean, the only better way is if I flew you out here, you know, and had you up here in the playhouse, and which is kind of almost the playhouse because my office used to be my boys' room, and it still actually has their names painted on the walls. So it's kind of, you know, we used to play up here, but and then you could be having coffee with me up here, and we could just kind of
be kicking
it old school, and, you know, maybe go out for a swim or for a bike or something. But we'll have to settle for over the phone and far away today. So,
that's all right.
Yeah. So, Amanda, we go back, you and I would say it's almost been 8 years now, if you think about
it. It's been a while.
I know.
Well before paratriathlon days, for sure.
Well before that. It's back when you were in charge of Team USA, as a matter of fact.
That's right.
You were the first year that I was a team coach for Team USA, you were responsible for that. And that's the year we went to Budapest, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, Budapest. First and only time, and maybe the last time I'll ever go.
you never know. It's interesting if you look back and, you know, any of the photos, even like if you watch Downton Abbey and they show like the Viking River cruises going through Budapest, you see the places that we were there, you know, they see the chain bridge.
That's true.
And you see the House of Commons there, and it was pretty cool, and it was a fun time. Those were some fun times back then.
It was cold and rainy, and there was a ton of athletes, it was interesting.
I don't know if you remember, but I lost some people on that first ride that we went out on, and you know, I came back, and you're like, is everybody here? And I'm like, I don't know. And your face
did they come back like an hour later?
They did kind of come back an hour later, and I was like, hey, how are you? Foreign country, dropped you off, it's dark and rainy, good on you. So... Those were good times. Those were good times. And then I think the next year was in Auckland. Was that right? 2011 was in Auckland, I think.
No, 2012 was in Auckland. 2011 was in China.
Was in China. That's right. It was Beijing. So it was there. And then you were still with age group Team USA then.
Yep.
And then you made the transition the next year over to Paris. Because I remember when we went to Auckland, that was the first year, I think, that I remember you being in charge of Para.
Yeah, that's right. That's when we launched our high-performance program, was in 2012.
Well,
that would be right.
That's awesome. Now, you know, backing up just a hair here, because we'll dig deep into the Para side, but Amanda, the other thing that we have in common is a love for the University of Alabama. Is that true?
Yeah, Roll Tide.
Roll Tide, Roll Tide. So for the people that don't know, what is your connection to the University of Alabama?
Yeah, so I actually went to school at Alabama to get my master's degree in sport management. But really why I decided to go there was because my grandfather in the 40s, early 40s, actually went to school there and met my grandmother, and he played football for the University of Alabama.
Bear? Did he play under Bear?
No, it was pre-Bear. Bear Bryant was actually a graduate assistant at that time. And so my grandfather and him were really good friends and wrote to each other even as soon as like a month or so before his death.
Wow. That's super cool. That is super cool. And it must have been a fun reunion because we had a number of national races. The nationals were there and collegiates have been there in Tuscaloosa since you graduated. Going back must be kind of like a fun reunion.
It is. I love going back to Tuscaloosa every year. In fact, when the very first year that USA Triathlon was in Tuscaloosa was in 2007 and I was in school, I actually volunteered to help out during race week. So I actually got my first taste of working with USA Triathlon as a volunteer for a weekend.
Oh, wow. So, cool.
Yeah.
I mean, who would have ever thought that, you know, such a rich football town would have turned out to embrace triathlon the way it has? I mean, it is, really has gone all out to keep the sport there and to keep it there at a high level.
Yeah, I think it's a sports town. I think Tuscaloosa has always been a sports town. They like sports and all types of sports. I mean, looking at their gymnastics team, their women's gymnastics team is amazing. Their softball team is amazing.
Yeah.
Their baseball team is doing really well. So I just think they have a rich history of sport, a love of sport. So it's really not a surprise that I think they've taken to the sport of triathlon. And I think USA Triathlon has showed them how awesome and amazing the sport is and what a good organization USA Triathlon is to organize those events. So I think they've sort of made it easy for Tuscaloosa to welcome us back year after year.
Well, and I'm sure you are not arguing against the location there every time we come out.
That's right. Not at all. Not at all.
No, it is good. So another thing that has happened recently is you have become a mom.
Yes, I have a 3.5-year-old boy named Mason. And then most recently, 5 months ago, I had another boy named Nolan. So I have two small boys, a newborn and a toddler.
Well, that sounds like a lot of fun. I know where that is going. I've been there and done that.
Oh, gosh. We took our oldest to his first hockey game to the Avalanche play this weekend. And now it's, Mommy, I'm going to play hockey.
Yes.
Oh, gosh.
Yes. Yes. Here we go. Here we go. Uncle Chris is going to come and just rain down all kinds of hockey gifts and knowledge and stuff on him. And
oh gosh,
you have to.
I'm happy he plays sports. Like, I'm all in for playing sports. He's going to play flag football this spring, and he's been swimming for the last few months. He's played soccer last fall. So I'm all for different sports, but hockey. Man, the amount of equipment and the cost for that one.
Oh, it's not, but football's kind of the same, and there's a lot of things that are benefits of it. It's usually that, you know, it's indoors. It's kind of like the anti team swimming. Because if they choose to go into swimming, you basically just, you know, spend your life inside a smelly pool that's 1,000 degrees and 100% humidity.
True.
And hockey's just the exact opposite. It is still smelly. But you know, it usually smells like old nachos, and refined rubber because of the flooring, but it's always so cold. I mean, the moms are, you know, like they're lighting little fires outside just to keep everybody warm. It looks like a bunch of hobos. Get the barrels going and they're burning old hockey sticks.
Yeah, I think I'll be happy. I'm just glad that he is extremely active and into sports. And, you know, when the little one gets to be older, I imagine they'll be into wrestling and fighting and boxing and all those fun boy sports that brothers do. Right?
Oh, yeah. They'll do stuff like, you know, throw harmonicas at each other at point blank range and break their, you know, their teeth. And I can just, you know, blueprint it out for the next, you know, 8 years for you if you really need to see that. But
That'd be great. Maybe don't scare me quite yet. Maybe give me a couple years.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, there are good times. Trust me. They are the best of friends. They are the worst of friends. It's like sometimes you just want to go, would you just stop yelling at each other? But, you know, if it wasn't for Julian, then Cole wouldn't have someone to play Yu-Gi-Oh! With, which is apparently this new card game that's like Pokemon, but different and more expensive.
Well, you don't want to play that. So it's nice that he has a brother to play with.
Well, I don't understand it. Like I've tried to understand these things. Like they bring home all these games and, you know, I want to let the 9-year-old Cole, I want to let him try and tell me what to play. But like, it's almost like having a 4-year-old trying to tell you the movie plot for Avengers. You know, it's like, what? There's a green guy, you know, it's like you just can't like follow it. And so you try your best.
Yeah.
Are you going to try and round it out for a girl? Or are you guys pretty content there?
Ooh, I'm only 5 months into this newborn process. So maybe give me post Tokyo. Ask me again.
Okay. wait a little bit. Wait for the girl to come and then that'll kind of round out your house. Cause it does. A girl brings balance to the force. Let me just tell you that. A girl does.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm living in a house of boys. My dogs are boy dogs.
Oh my God. The urine must be everywhere.
I need like a female cat or something. I don't know.
You need some estrogen. No cats. No cats. They'll hide and give you no support.
Yeah. Well, my husband's allergic too, so that won't work. I need some sort of other female in the house for sure.
Oh yeah. That's true. It would be like a little cat fight. Like, get away. So you eventually went from Team USA over to Para. Give us a little bit of background on like how that kind of came about and how that played out in your head and where you see that program kind of evolving from where it is now to where it was, or I'm sorry, from where it was to where it is now.
Yeah. So how I sort of got started is kind of a funny story. But back in 2010, early 2010, before we knew that paratriathlon was going to be a Paralympic sport, our CEO at the time, Skip Gilbert, sort of went around the office and said, is there anybody who's interested in maybe helping out and doing a little bit of paratriathlon? And no one knew what paratriathlon was in the office. It wasn't common nomenclature. It actually wasn't even called paratriathlon back then. I think it was called Athletes with a Disability, AWOD.
Para's way better than AWOD.
Totally. Definitely a step in the right direction.
Where are those AWODers around at?
Yeah. And so I kind of raised my hand and said, that kind of sounds, I'd be interested to learn more and do some helping out. And that was all the way back in early 2010. And then in December of that year, we found out that the sport got added to the Paralympic Games in Rio for 2016. And so we knew it was going to entail starting an infrastructure to grow the sport and to create a high-performance program and to create pipelines to get competitive athletes racing at the highest level. And so I was sort of doing para and doing national events at the same time. And then finally, as we got into 2012, we launched our high performance program and it just became too much. It was basically two full-time jobs and working on the Paralympic side of the sport became a full-time job. And so I just sort of transitioned into doing full-time Paralympic triathlon stuff. And really starting from 2012, you know, we didn't really know what we were doing. And it's kind of funny to think back and look back at, you know, what we were doing in 2012. You know, we were looking to see like what our Olympic team had been doing because it's a relatively new sport as well, and saying, well, gosh, what if any of that translates to para? And it turned out that really not much translated to para triathletes and what would work for para triathletes. So really, I kind of joke that we sort of made it up as we went, and every year we'd create a roadmap, and I surrounded myself with expert coaches and athletes who had been in the game for quite a while and, you know, picking up some new athletes along the way and just sort of, you know, figuring out as we went as what worked and what didn't and who our top performers were and rewarding those top performers. But it was a rough couple of years of trying to figure out the funding side for our athletes. And ITU, International Triathlon Union, finally started to put some races together and some legit paratriathlon events and put some world rankings together and really trying to get our athletes to be ranked just like our Olympic athletes, ranked high in the rankings, racing all across the world. And, you know, obviously that comes with a lot of money. So figuring out how to find money to help support our athletes to those events, and also growing this grassroots side of the sport. So getting awareness out there that there is this sport, triathlon, and anybody can do it, and really getting the word out to any and every far corner of North America to let people know that paratriathlon is an option for you to live a healthy and awesome life. And it's a sport that anybody can do, really, is our mantra that we've been shopping around. And it's certainly not a done deal. We're certainly still out there reaching all the far corners of the country, trying to spread the word and get more people doing the sport. And I have to say, every year we've been more successful at getting more people into the sport and, you know, making more disabled individuals paratriathletes. And, you know, as you know, when someone does their first race, they're hooked and they can't wait to do their next race. And then they can't wait to do the next race after that. And, you know, some of those athletes turn out to be, you know, amazing athletes and some of the world's best triathletes.
There's not, you know, and it's funny, I was talking to, I have one of my athletes has a cochlear implant. And it just kind of got finalized recently, but we've been coaching together for a couple of years, and she had asked me about that. So she took me out for coffee and asked me about, you know, why I wanted to do, you know, wanted to be involved with para, and you know, what are some of the insights that I've had since in just the short amount of time that I've been exposed to it and working with athletes. And, you know, I said the thing that, you know, that kind of hit me was initially I was very intimidated by it. You know, I thought, oh my goodness, there must be so much I don't know here. And, you know, there is a lot of that. And the thing that I did was I kind of came into it and I said, well, everybody's an individual. And that's kind of the way that I normally have coached, is that I don't, you know, kind of do formulas. I don't do cookie cutter stuff. It's everybody's individualized. You have to understand who the individual is. You have to understand what their limitations are, whether that's, you know, they got 16 kids or they, you know, have $5 to their name, whatever it might be. You understand what their limitations are and you work around those. And, mm-hmm. And so you end up coaching the individual. And I said, you know, the thing that I found out was that once I got past the, you know, my own trepidation of, you know, am I going to be okay doing this? Am I going to be good enough? Is that I look at everybody as just as an individual, and that's kind of the way it's been. And, you know, you do an evaluation on somebody and it has, you basically just see them as just another athlete. And I don't, and it sounds kind of, you know, maybe funny, but that's from a coaching model, it's exactly the same thing. You have to use all your spidey senses to understand if, you know, it's a person understanding you, you know, are they in, you know, how are they doing inside their, you know, inside their recovery cycle? What are the things that they need to develop most on their technique? What are the things that are, you know, that they have to use and, or cannot use, and just, you know, just like anybody else. And really it has, I would say for, you know, for me, it's freed me up to be able to be more expressive and to kind of dive in deeper and to even push me farther to wanting to, you know, be more involved with it.
Yeah, these athletes are some of the most amazing athletes on the planet. And I love working with these athletes and I love what I do every day because of the people. The people are amazing. And like you said, everybody has their own challenges. Everybody's an individual and everybody has their own story. And to get to know those individuals and to get to see their progress through maybe doing their first race to, you know, competing at the Paralympic Games. It's pretty awesome stuff.
Yeah. I mean, they're all driven. They're elite athletes in every sense of the word, you know, from the way that they take on their nutrition, the way they take on their training, the way they develop their programming, you know, the way that they're just very insightful about their equipment. There's no difference. And I hope more people can see that, but it's you know, for me, it's inspiring to be a part of it. Cause I just love, you know, watching people at the top of their game and being and developing and it is fun. And, you know, being able to, you know, I'm not going to lie, you know, being able to work with people that medaled in the Olympic Games was super fun, you know, working with Melissa and Haley and Alyssa and just being, you know, being there. And I mean, it's funny. I saw, you know, from our swim camp, one of our swimmers there, Howie, was there, and I saw a video of that he was in from Dare to Try, and the first thing that came to my mind was that he just didn't have any gel in his hair in his video. Because if you remember Howie, he's like Mr. Product, you know, he would swim and his little faux hawk would never even go away. And the thing that I noticed, it was like the thing that I noticed the most in this video was like, oh wow, Howie's got no product in his hair. Like that must be an old video, you know? And so it was, but it's a lot of fun. And it does seem like there's, you know, there is like just nothing but like open growth in front of us from athletes that, you know, that may have been able bodied to, you know, that were athletes before and now want to, you know, still be competitive and still compete. This is, you know, it's definitely a growing game. And I've got one athlete, Adam, who is that's his MO. You know, he was an able bodied athlete when I coached him, and then he lost a leg in an accident, and now he's competing as a para athlete, and he's just as competitive and he's just as driven, maybe even more. And it's like that doesn't, you know, part of you might be taken away, but this is not something that is ever going to be taken away. It's always going to be an avenue. And I love that we support it and that we develop it. And, you know, even programs that like the CAF and Dare to Try, and watching the, you know, how those have blossomed and to see the support that they get across the board is, you know, I think for me is very encouraging. And I would think from your standpoint that to know that there are big organizations like that out there have to be helpful as well.
Oh my gosh. We wouldn't even be anywhere near where we are as a program and as a sport here in the US without organizations like that. And there's lots of others out there that are, you know, putting on the local camp for their local paratriathletes to do a couple races a year. I mean, without organizations like that, I don't think we would definitely not be where we are. We wouldn't be pulling these athletes out of the woodwork. It still amazes me that there are athletes who are paratriathletes and have been doing triathlons for years, and I've never heard of them. And I've never heard of them. They've never heard of us. And they've just been out there loving the sport, doing local races, and not even realizing that there's an avenue for them to potentially compete at the biggest sporting events in the world in the Paralympic Games. So it's pretty cool to have those realizations come together, and it happens far, far too often, which is pretty cool.
So what do you do when you find that, or how are you doing this? How are you informing people about some of the opportunities? Cause there are so many of them out there, not just through USA Triathlon and Paratriathlon, but you know, just knowing that there are, you know, for people that are active military, or that, hey, like, my guy, Adam, his company actually pays for his coaching, that there are some of these opportunities out there that people may not have any awareness of. How are you, or how is the organization reaching out to people to try and just get the word out? What are some of the methods that are being used?
Yeah, so we're just trying to let people know that we exist and there's opportunity for them. So last year we launched our youth paratriathlon initiative at the national level. So going out and trying to find some of those youth kids and get them to youth and junior nationals in Ohio so that they're, you know, seeing other kids who have similar impairments as theirs and competing against other kids. And seeing all these small kids, whether they have an impairment or not, compete together in this awesome venue. We're looking to launch a collegiate program. So reaching out to all of our collegiate clubs and all of our NCAA schools and get them involved with their adaptive rec program at their school. Because there are lots of adaptive rec programs at colleges and universities already, and they're doing sports. And well, why they may not be doing triathlon specifically, if there's a triathlon club at that school, could we merge the two together to create, to include these adaptive athletes in the tri club? Because as you know, there's a lot of crossover and a lot of things that these disabled athletes are able to do alongside their able-bodied peers. And then just really working with our regions. We restructured our regions within USAT. And so getting the word out to those regions and helping us essentially find that talent and spread the word that this sport exists. And there's a whole big program around it and, you know, camp opportunities through Dare to Try or through USAT. You mentioned our military program. That's probably one of our longest running programs is a military program. And what we did for quite a few years was working with existing adaptive rec centers, like the National Ability Center out in Park City, Utah, for example, and working with them to host a clinic and then, you know, get 10 paratriathletes out to do a 2-day clinic. And then on the last day, they do a super sprint triathlon. And then from there, it kind of springboarded them to, you know, maybe coming to the Paranational Championship and maybe even making the development team at some point. So we're just, with limited budget, we're sort of chipping away at lots of different avenues and lots of different national programs that we're trying to start to get more awareness about the sport. I think, you know, letting people know that we have this avenue for them and there's this big program, this big community, and there's hundreds of paratriathletes racing across the country at any given time, you know, letting them know that they're not alone and there's other people who are, you know, similar to them that are doing the sport.
Yeah. So currently we have a national team, a development team. Can you give us a little insight as like what those levels are, how they are determined, how they're supported, how people qualify for those, and how does somebody get on the radar if they want to become, if they want to try and kind of move up the food chain?
Yeah. So the number one thing that I tell someone who's sort of new to the sport, maybe they've been doing triathlons for a little bit, maybe they're considering getting started in triathlon, it's get to the national championship, get to the paratriathlon national championship. Because that is the race that you can see how you stack up against your peers. It's an event where you can get classified at the national level to make sure that you're competing in the right class and competing against those who have similar impairments to yours. And then from there, that's really how our development team is born, is through that national championship. So the winner of each sport class gets on that development team. And from there, they get some financial help to pay for a coach. A lot of these athletes can't afford coaches. It's certainly not a priority for them to have a coach. But once they make that development team, we sort of push the fact that if they want to make it to that next level, which is the national team, they need to get a coach and start being invested in their journey. And so USA Triathlon has a little bit of resources to help them with that coach. And then from there, it's the national team. And there's lots and lots of different ways to make the national team. So it's kind of hard to nail down exactly what it is, but the national team athletes are really the ones who are having consistent podium performances at the top races in the world. So there's World Paratriathlon Series events that ITU puts on. So there's 3 of those every year, along with a world championship. So those national team athletes are really going to those 4 events every season, and they're consistently getting on the podium. And really, that's 100% support from USA Triathlon. So it's paying for their travel to get to those events, having coaching and resources for them on the ground once they're at these events, and then paying for their coach. That way they don't have to worry about the financial side of, you know, having enough money to pay for their coach. They also get a training stipend. So if they need to take off some extra time to travel to events, or if maybe they're not able to work full time because they're training, we're seeing more and more, just like the able-bodied side, that it's difficult for some of these athletes to have a full 40-hour-a-week job and also train to be an elite athlete. So providing them a little bit of training stipend so that maybe if they have to give back a few hours at work, they have additional income coming in. And so really we're looking for those national team athletes to be the ones who are probably vying for spots at the Paralympic Games. So our focus after our debut in Rio in 2016 has turned towards Tokyo in 2020, and we're about 2.5 years out from that. And our Paralympic qualification period will start sometime next year. So I know basically all of our athletes are just looking to get their rankings as high as they can so that once the qualification period starts next year, they're able to get into the right event to earn points in the Paralympic ranking.
Well, that's got to be a big medal that everybody's looking to try to achieve. And I know that going into Rio, we only had a certain number of medals that were awarded, and some people were kind of normally would compete in different classes, ended up kind of competing against each other, where, you know, above the knee and below the knee athletes were kind of going head to head, which sometimes maybe not even or equal, but it's kind of a piece of our growth. But going into Tokyo, if I understand correctly, we have more medals that will be awarded for Tokyo, which allows for kind of some more definition of our classes to be able to compete on a little bit more of an even playing field. Is that true?
So for Tokyo, we do have more metal events. I think ITU did a really great job of highlighting our sport in its debut in 2016. I think the races were fairly exciting to watch, and I think the spectators and the International Paralympic Committee, IPC, really enjoyed the sport. And so they rewarded us with two additional sport classes in Tokyo. So we'll have 8 different medal events, 4 male and 4 female medal events, and more athletes. So there's going to be 80 athletes towing the line from all across the world. And yeah, ITU has not said what medal events are eligible for Tokyo. So it is sort of one of the final pieces we're waiting for. There will be some athletes who will not be eligible to compete in Tokyo, just as they were for Rio. So we're sort of waiting for ITU to come out and announce that. And we're hoping sometime later this summer that they'll be announcing what those classes are.
Well, hopefully they're a lot more expedient than they have been for some of the world's races, where they give you the information about an hour before the race starts as to what we can do, knowing that it's like, hey, let's just hurry this stuff up just a little bit, right? Because we need some planning.
Yeah. I think from the athlete's side, I think it's really difficult. I think it's a big commitment once you're going to commit and try to make and medal at a Paralympic Games. And so without knowing if your sport costs it or not, it's hard to maybe 100% fully commit to everything that involves, knowing that you may be out of the game before the game even started. So,
yeah. Well, let's hope that comes around pretty quick. And I'm excited to see the field that we will put together. I know that we have a ton of talent out there, and I know that there's a lot of talent that are a lot of people that are gunning for us, especially, you know, when we take up the whole podium on the female side. That's, you know, that's like, okay, well, somebody's going to try and, you know, knock us off there at some point in time.
Yeah, we definitely have a target on our back. In Rio in 2016, we led the medal count, and so we definitely have a big target on our back going into 2020, but I think we have a really good amount of pool, a really good amount of pool. We have a really good talent pool and a lot of athletes who are legit podium contenders that are, going to be bringing their A game. And, you know, there could be even some athletes, it's crazy to say, but there could even be an athlete that we don't even know about that is out there potentially listening to this podcast, who decides that this is something that they want to do and they want to become a paratriathlete. And maybe they're going to be the next, you know, Melissa Stockwell standing on the podium in 2020. So
let's say somebody, we have somebody out there. Where would be the first place that you would direct them to? And obviously it's probably a website. Where would you send them to find out just some basic preliminary information about the sport?
Yeah, I would definitely send them to the website. We try our best to keep as much information as we can, up-to-date information on the website. And it's usaparatriathlon.org. We'll take you right to the site, and that's kind of your good first step. And, you know, read things over, and then from there you'll find some contact details for myself or for others that you might be able to reach out to learn a little bit more and to answer questions that you have after reading things over. So definitely our website is the first place to go to get initial information.
And then Amanda will contact you directly, no matter what time of day it is. No, just kidding.
That's right. I work 24/7. I don't sleep.
Mom's life is never done, right?
That's right.
That's so true. Well, you know, the other thing I was thinking about is just watching some of the winter para games, and you know, our family is obviously from Minnesota here, and there were so many Minnesotans at the at both games. The cross country skiing that was done on the para side was just crazy. And thinking about how the arm strength, the turnover, the coordination, we got to be able to put some of those people, you know, into the pool and onto a good wheelie chair and just totally crush some crowds there by making some crossover athletes from winter sports to summer sports.
Yeah, you know, I've been in conversations with the Paranordic group about just that, and in fact, we actually shared a 3-time world champion triathlete with our Paranordic team a couple of years ago, mm-hmm. just to try out the sport. And her name is Kendall Gretsch. And she actually wound up making the team for Pyeongchang and came away with 2 gold medals.
Sweet.
At the games.
Wow. I didn't know she was a triathlete.
Yep, she started as a paratriathlete, as a three-time world champion, and gave Nordic a try because her sport class didn't get into Rio for 2016. And so she thought, well, gosh, I need another outlet. And she's from up there with you Northerners. And
up there.
up there with you Northerners. And gave it a try, and she actually turned out to be pretty good. So I'm curious to see if I know Kendall's going to be looking to come back once PyeongChang is over, which it just ended this weekend. So I know she'll be back to triathlon training here shortly. So I'm curious if she'll bring any of those athletes with her. So we've definitely seen some success in crossover.
That's exciting. So that really, like, there's with that level of development and that level of talent, there's kind of the sky's the limit for us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think U.S. Paralympic sports has done such an amazing job at recruiting. And I think that's one of the things that I know U.S. Paralympics we've all talked about. I think being a multi-sport event in triathlon, there's a lot of crossover from other sports, whether it be cycling track or Nordic or, you know, any of these other endurance type events. There's a lot of crossover. So if someone's, you know, maybe not rowing is another good one. If there's not success in one sport, you know, there could be success in another. And so I think, you know, we've been having those conversations and talking about what we call talent transfer for quite a few years.
Yeah. So I think about it, even in the able-bodied triathlon world and the art Olympic side, you know, you think about how Barb Lindquist came from swimming, you know, Sheila Tarminas did the same thing. And then she ended up moving out of, modern pentathlon. Like it's like just being a professional Olympian for the rest of your life. Okay. You know, cause you're so gifted and you actually know how to ride a horse. There you are. There's just so much talent out there.
Absolutely. I look at our Rio Paralympic team, and there were quite a few crossover athletes. There were athletes who had been to multiple Paralympic games in swimming or track or wheelchair marathon. I mean, just so much crossover in sports for us that I think that's kind of a cool thing. I think some of these other Paralympic sports, there might be an age cap and an age limit, and they're looking for the younger talent. But for us, I mean, you could be any age and be a competitive paratriathlete. I like to say that our wheelchair male who went to Rio, Krieger Chavor, he was 54 on the day of the Paralympic Games. And he's still out there today. He won the LA Wheelchair Marathon this past weekend.
Wow.
Still out there competing at an elite high level. So there really is no age limit for our sport, which is pretty cool too.
That is a huge advantage. And well, 2020 is going to be coming up real quick, and so because of that, we're gonna let you go back to your real day job and stop sloughing off, just, you know, chitty chatting with us here. But Amanda, can't thank you enough for coming out and spending some time with us, just kind of sharing your story and para with us, and look forward to all the work that you're going to do going forward, and all the work that USA Paratriathlon will produce and the athletes that will get out on the field.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. Thanks for letting me chat with you today and get out my story and talk a little bit about the sport that I'm so passionate about.
All right, thank you. Well, everybody, we can't thank you enough for spending the time with us again, and we look forward to seeing you back next time. So for now, keep on trying, everybody. What held me down until you came.